Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
Embracing the idea of an energy and that over religion, the concept of religion.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast where we bring you conversations with the most important figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sataro. This is episode 111, a talk with Vinny Paz of Jedi Mind Tricks. Vinny teamed up with Jedi Mind Tricks producer Stoop the Enemy of Mankind when the duo were teenagers in Philadelphia. They released their debut EP, Amber Probe, back in 1996. Vinny's raps about politics, mythology, war, religion, conspiracy theories, and the paranormal set him apart immediately from most of the underground rap of the era. Amber Probe was followed the next year by The Psychosocial, Chemical, Biological, and Electromagnetic Manipulation of Human Consciousness, a bizarre, fascinating, and uncompromising concept album. In 2000, the group put out Violent by Design, a more streamlined and aggressive record that got a lot of attention and remains a fan favorite to this day. Vinny and Jedi Mind Tricks would continue through ups and downs, with frequent collaborator Jus Allah and Stoop himself moving in and out of the group over the years. Vinny has also released records under his own name, with the Army of the Pharaohs Collective, and with Ill Bill as the duo Heavy Metal Kings. Through it all, his expansive vision, powerful style, and devotion to his fans has remained consistent. His latest release with a reunited Jedi Mind Tricks is The Thief and the Fallen. Strangely, just like in our interview with Scarface, we began by talking about Gene Simmons and Kiss. If you enjoy The Cipher and want to see it continue, consider making a donation at patreon.com/thecyphershow. We even have special rewards and experiences for our donors. Also, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to The Cipher on iTunes. The more 5-star ratings we get, the better chance we have of continuing to get great guests. And now, here's Icon the Verbal Hologram, the Pasmanian Devil, Louis Dogs, Boxcutter Pazzi, Odrama Bin Laden, Pazman, Pazienza, Icon the Python, Vinny P, the Genocide General, Vincent Price, Frank Vinatra, Vinny Appice, Pazienza Pontius Pilate, or as you might know him, Vinny Paz.
He is fucking bat shit crazy, Gene, but he's not good bat shit. He's a dickhead. He's delusional. He still thinks they invented everything. My brother's 48. Like, God. To, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, now he mocks them, you know what I mean? Right. Because of what they become. It's a parody, you know what I mean, at this point. 60-year-old men, you know, and fucking the ramblings of fucking Paul Stanley on stage are like, the only better stage rambler is fucking Kronos from Venom.
he's
bad shit.
Insane.
Bro, there's some shit like, you remember the Beasties sample? Wild man, wild.
All right, get off the bus.
You're wild man, wild.
That's insane.
That was from, that's him.
That's it.
Yeah, but like just this bad, like over the top fucking like Viking, like bad metalhead in between. Like, we come here from the nether regions to torture your soul. But for like fucking 20 minutes, in between 20 minute songs.
So we said, fuck you, man. We gotta get out here and do some gigs. Cause you're wild, man. Wild. So we're gonna do a track for you now. You know, you heard some rumors out here that Venom have packed in, yes? Venom is supposed to have finished. Well, we're recording a fucking new album now! It's a little bit different.
Amazing. I saw you saw fucking Slayer.
Yes.
In 86, something like
that? The Rain and Blood Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that?
Where?
How was that?
Oh, it was in... There's a club in Philly called the Trocadero.
Yeah.
There's a balcony. People were jumping off of the balcony. I've never seen it or heard of it in any scene. Punk, metal, hardcore, craziest shows. I don't care. Whatever lore there is out there of crazy shows.
Yeah.
When they did the, what was the place in New York? The Felt Forum?
Yeah.
I remember everyone ripped the seats out at that Slayer show and tore the seats apart.
The famous Slayer show at New York City's Felt Forum took place on August 31st, 1988. Former Roadrunner and Warner A&R rep Howie Abrams was there, and he remembered it this way. There was a sense of violence in the air from the minute I arrived at the show, says Abrams. It seemed as if half the crowd was on angel dust and just didn't give a fuck about their own safety, much less anyone else's. To this day, I don't recall seeing as many bloody, passed out, and fucked up kids in one building as I saw at this infamous show. According to the New York Times Review, fans started tearing out cushions from seats and throwing them around towards the end of the night to cause several thousand dollars worth of damage.
But there were DRI opened up, and people were jumping off of the balcony, and I'm like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is going on?
Like, not even caring if they land anywhere. Yeah,
not, like, just fucking reckless abandon, man. And, like, I don't know how I would react to that now at my age, but when you're a fucking kid, man, like, yeah. First off, seeing Slayer, and he's fucking Arias screaming, Hail Satan. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't even think I should have been there. It's probably why I'm the way I am.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, that was the original band. Sadly, they're not.
No.
They'll never
no,
be. There.
Never will be because, yeah, Hanneman passed, which is devastating. And they can't get it together with Lombardo. I think Kerry King is just a difficult guy, from what I can gather. I don't know him personally.
Yeah.
But I know Tom Mariah is, we were supposed to work together, actually, at one point. And he's like a sweetheart of a guy, you know, so I can't see him being the problem there. You know what I mean? Lombardo's best metal drummer ever to me.
I was going to ask about that because you have that one lyric where you shout out Vinny.
Vinny Appice.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I am Ibrahim's last prophecy. Earth is my property. I am possessed like I'm an apostrophe. Vinny Appice is like a star to me. Pass swear solemnly. Cut your fucking head like a lobotomy. Break the fucking beat like sodomy. Philosophy.
There's Vinny and Carmine. Vinny says Appice and Carmine says Appice. And they're brothers. And they argue how to say their last name. Yeah, but the Appice brothers, yeah, great drummers, yeah.
Yeah, who are some of your other favorite metal drummers?
Wow. I love Mitch Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's metal particularly. Wow.
Well, drummers generally, you know.
Yeah.
I was thinking about
you know who's a lunatic, and I can't think of his name. He left Mars Volta.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's fucking a maniac.
Yeah.
He had a side project with Zach De La Roca. They did two songs that were dope as fuck. I never heard another peep. It was just those two. I think it was called like Power of the Lion.
The drummer's name is John Theodore, and the group was called One Day as a Lion.
Wow.
Something like that. It was dope. That guy's amazing.
Have you ever thought about singing in like a hardcore band?
I did. Well,
you did that a little bit as a kid.
Yeah. I had like a couple bands with kids I grew up with in Philly. Yeah. Like hardcore and punk stuff. You know what I mean? Are you familiar with Terror, the hardcore band?
I don't know that.
They did a cover of a breakdown song on one of their 7-inches and I sung on it. My brother was in bands and our parents let them practice at our house. So obviously the first thing I did when they told me never to go near the instruments was to go down to the instruments. So
yeah.
I picked up the drums, you know, not, you know, good, but I can play a little bit of drums and bass and terribly guitar, but I just like, cause I would just mess around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Does any of that make it onto records, even in like demo?
I did the intro for a mixtape I did. I like played the bass line and programmed everything.
Let's play that game. How do you stop me? How do you stop something like this? How do you stop something that wins wars without lifting a finger? How do you stop something that's been worshipped by every culture since the dawn of ages? How do you stop something that can never be destroyed?
But nothing yet. I'm not... I think the prerequisite of becoming a rapper is to be delusional.
Right.
I luckily think I'm pretty.
You're okay.
Yeah, I think I'm all right.
Yeah. So the new record, right? Something, it's, you know, it's funny. I got it right around the time that I got it, completely independently of the record, although maybe it was kind of in the back of my mind somewhere. Uh-huh. I ended up rewatching Hellraiser and Nightbreed.
Oh wow, yeah. Dope. Yeah. The new Nightbreed version?
No, the one from when we were kids.
Okay, but you know there's a new version of that.
No.
Yeah, with like an extra half hour.
Oh wow.
Yeah, Clive like oversaw
it. Oh, of that
it.
Film. Yeah. Okay. No, I think yeah, I just saw whatever was on Netflix.
Yeah, you got to check it out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's dope.
Wow. So there's a lot of Clive Barker kind of themes, like particularly on the last song where you actually, you know, it's named after some of the
Merchant's Box
and the stories. And stuff.
Yeah.
The book and the blood on Jerusalem Street and the midnight meat train moving the heat. Roll head Rex had coot in his teeth. Every single one of y'all food for the beast and the human remains in the room for the pain and there's rules to the game when you're new to the game and it's blue in the vein and you shoot it again and the sins of the father to the loose of his reign.
But his themes kind of like go through the whole record.
Yeah. I guess when you're a kid and bad shit happens, you just try to escape it somehow. People like us pick music and then, you know, reading a lot. Like my pop died. I was 10. Like, I guess I was into Clive and Hellraiser by like 11. Then I started reading everything. You know what I mean? Like got me through some stuff and got to meet him at a signing and shit in Philly and like, you know, tell him like, thank you. You know, it's always cool to thank anyone that got you through a rough time. So, when Stoop was giving me the beats for the record, I don't know why, it just started reminding me. I don't know if you would call it a disease, there's a condition. When you hear music, you like hear colors.
Mm-hmm.
The word synthesis might be
synesthesia or something?
Synesthesia.
I have that. So when he gives me things, I see colors. And then when I see colors, colors remind me of other things. Like, the reason the cover of the album is the way it is, because the whole time I kept feeling blue, feeling the color. And I don't know how to articulate that. You know, remember in Mask when he's trying to teach the girl, the blind girl, Laura Dern, how things look, but he's trying to do it through touch because she can't see? It's sort of the same concept. Like, I couldn't articulate things with words. When Jan was talking to the artist that was doing it, I was like, I don't know much, but I sing blue and this is the title, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry with the Clive thing.
Oh,
so as he was giving me the beats, I was sort of like seeing colors, and then some of the colors started reminding me of Clive stuff, you know. So I didn't want to OD and be like too overt where it's like I'm rapping about how
it's a concept record about Midian or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
the gates of Midian.
Everything's true. God's an astronaut. Oz is over the rainbow. Midian is where the monsters live.
You know, it's I mean, as brilliant as all that. I just kind of like snuck it in there, you know, organically, and like heads that are into Clive will get it, and heads that aren't into Clive, it isn't so there in your face that it would alienate them. You know what I mean? That's tricky to do. You know, I didn't want to alienate any people by being like, I'm gonna fucking rap about Clive Barker for 60 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. You're already dealing with niche audiences. You know what I mean? When you make the type of music we do, you know what I mean? Or your punk rock, or you're not dealing with, you know, the 22 million people that listen to Taylor Swift. So you can't alienate the already alienated, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. We're already dealing with this, you know, this niche that's, you know, I always try not to, I alienate people in so many other ways.
Right.
So
maybe not do it with,
maybe not do it with that.
But you did make an elaborate concept album, actually, your first full-length album.
Yeah, isn't that the fucking dumbest thing you've ever heard? I'm going to come out. The first thing people are going to hear about me is going to be a batshit PCP-influenced conspiracy theory. So where you going to stand when the Elohim returns? Seven great sages throughout the ages say you burn. It's my turn to shine. I redefine the crystalline biological structures implanted in your mind. So I find the deaf, dumb, and blind. It may be the dumbest idea in the history of music.
It's a great record. I mean, the title, I can't even remember the full title.
Psychosocial, Chemical, Biological, and Electromagnetic Manipulation of Human Consciousness.
There you go.
What was I thinking? There was no, if you don't believe in like the punk rock ethic, then that should prove it, that we weren't trying to become darlings, you know, in any way. It was like, let me take something from the Bhagavad Gita, make that the cover, have an unpronounceable title, and then this whole record will be talking about things that 98% of the population either A, don't know about, or B, believe, or C, care about.
You know? Right. So I was going to ask kind of where your head was at making that record, because there's all this stuff going on, right? You have like these scientific ideas,
sure,
these historical ideas, biblical,
sure,
mythological stuff from literature. I don't quite know how to say that. It's not like you draw strong divisions between those categories on the record. Cyborg, the mind warp to the womb. In line, moving to sea, travel moons from Iliune. The ancient palace, the ancient chalice. Mystical like Aurora Borealis. The palace of pain. Yahweh came down upon it in flame. Half fable, half pain. It's slain with a verbal flame. Bring forth the sight. Right. It's all kind of part of this worldview, right? You're
sure.
Not like, this bit's from the Bible, and this bit's sure from history, and this is about, you know, UFO. And I was just kind of curious about your mind state while you were writing that.
I think it was as all over the place as how you just said it. I think rather than say I have the answers to anything, it's like, well, let me just show you everything, and then you take what you take from it. You know what I mean? The same way, like, I remember someone once said, it was Artie Lang, the comedian Artie Lang, was like, the one thing about The Simpsons and Seinfeld is morons like it and smart people like it, and for two totally different fucking reasons. And when you can find that sweet spot, you become fucking Larry David and Jerry, you know what I mean? And it's like, I was never able to do that, you know what I mean? It was so alienating of a record, you know what I mean? But as far as my headspace, it was just, I was taking in so much information, and I was so young that I didn't know how to funnel it properly how I would today. You know what I mean? Like, if I had all that shit in my head today, that record wouldn't come out that way. It would be less abrupt and, like, jarring, you know? It definitely was like, you know, there is an art in making a record that is divisive. You know what I mean? Like, most of my favorite music is super divisive music that people are either offended by or find it mortifying or just can't get it. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm proud to have one of those records in my catalog.
Yeah.
But if you think back upon it, like from a business standpoint, first off, it was vinyl only. Morons. No CDs or cassettes. Idiots.
And this was in 1997,
correct.
So it's not like CDs were unheard of.
Correct. It's not 1982. You know, even that might have been stupid because there was still you could not do, you could not look at the product from the start of production of a record to the final product and do it more wrong than that record was done. And it's mind-boggling.
It's amazing. I guess another thing about that record is you have some stuff about Jesus, right? But it's about him being created by aliens.
Sure.
The basis is an extraterrestrial created Christ and have a device that recorded all of Earth's history and can display it in the form of a hologram precise. Construction of synthetic humanoids is among us. You are banned to the land of Nod to face the deafening thunders and the spiritual wonders.
About him studying in Tibet, things like that.
Sure.
Study with Chinese masters like Jesus in Tibet, staff of Moses, urn of ashes, morphing my soul into solids, liquids, and gases.
And it got me thinking, like, I don't, you know, I know that your family is Roman Catholic.
Sure,
and
man,
you
I'm an
are,
Italian kid from Philly.
Right, and you're, you know, at some point became, and I believe still are, Islamic. And where in your journey kind of were you during the making of that record? I think just the stuff about Jesus and how it was, you know, unorthodox got me wondering that.
I was just I think you're trying to find yourself at that age and you think you have all the answers. And it's not until you're our age now that you realize you didn't know shit then. You know what I mean? And all the shit that, whether it was your parents or the smart uncle that you liked, it was like, you don't know shit. Trust me, you're going to look back and realize you didn't know shit and you just don't listen. It's why people make mistakes and you just have to allow them to make those mistakes. It's like the same thing with Islam. And like, I found Islam, it helped me at a rough time. But as I get older, I'm definitely embracing the idea of an energy and that over religion, the concept of religion. I think, and we all can agree that it's caused every war that's ever happened. You know, whatever religion, you know what I mean? We're going back to the Crusades. And how much do I want to associate myself with any specific, I don't want to say organization or religion, just anything that, because all holy books can be distorted for your own. You see politicians distorting the Bible for, you know, like in terms of gay marriage and stuff like that. It's like, I just don't understand why they're manipulating it for to fit their narrative and not allowing people to just live their lives. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's sad. You know what I'm saying? And like, and when you start saying like, all right, the Quran is a beautiful book. Islam got me through a rough time. But what happens if you start saying, well, do I believe everything word for word here? Well, what about the fact that every of the Abrahamic religions condemn homosexuality? So am I now, do I become a homophobe? You know what I'm saying? Like if I've said...
Well, you had some, you know, a lot of language on a lot of your records that might lead people to think that.
Yeah,
That vanished, this record. Actually, I was going to ask you about that maybe down the line. Like, that stuff just completely...
I'll tell you what comes around from being in South Philly and you're arguing with someone and you call them a faggot, you grow up and realize that this goes further than your block. And your boys on your block know that you're not calling them a homosexual. You know what I'm saying? I'm not defending it. I'm just saying how it was, or, you know what I mean?
But it's then like, at a certain point, you realize your voice goes wider than
yes,
your block.
Yes, and I think that's, you have to start taking responsibility for shit. And like, I have a two-year-old son now, and like, there's a couple things I've said in the past that I would have changed. You know what I mean? Because I don't, like, my mom's television habits basically consist of any show with a midget, or any show with gay people. My mom is like, my mom is so fucking liberal and like loving of everyone. And she's like obsessed with the gay community. You know what I mean? Like, and even through her, like she'd be like, you don't, that's not how you are. You know what I mean? But like you said, the scope of it, like, does a kid in Scandinavia get that? Does he know that? Like, I don't know that it's just some shit on the block. Stop being a faggot. Like, you know what I mean? Now hearing myself say it now, it's like, oh, wow, man. Like, I didn't want anyone to think of it like that, or like, you know what I mean? If a kid like isn't super macho at school, that my lyric like made him push a kid at school or something. If that was the reality, I think I don't know that I could live with that. You know what I mean? Like, there's other shit that I say that people don't like that as I get over, I will continue to defend. Like, I don't like police. Mm-hmm. I don't like that they can kill unarmed black men and walk. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Will I step away from that? No. Was it a conscious effort to try to realize that there's people that have my face tattooed on them and shit, and if they would go that far, that maybe what taking something literally that I didn't think anyone would take literally, I got to start thinking about that. Could I play that? You know, I don't. When I say can I play this in front of my son, I don't mean the curse words. I'm weird about that, man. I curse like a sailor, and that's just how it is. I don't believe that. I believe that the raising and loving, raising a child lovingly, and they know you love them, and you hug them and kiss them and tell them you love them all the time is good parenting. If I stub my toe or bang my ankle and yell fuck, my child's gonna be just fine.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So I don't mean like can I play it in front of my kid in terms of cursing, but the idea is. So I even want the concept. Like, oh, is he anti? It's like, oh, are you anti-Christian? Like, no, but I do get where you could see it because of the shit that I said. But I was saying it that crazily because sometimes motherfuckers won't listen. So you find yourself going, you know, it's like, all right, I don't want to hold back. And then you find yourself going too far one way to try to prove a point. You know what I'm saying? Or like,
yeah.
And
well, also religion-wise, I think, you know, around like, when was it? 04, you know, some of the stuff you were doing was, you know, you did that Scars of the Crucifix song, which maybe is something you're talking about in terms of the language against Christianity.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, that song also was defending Islam in a very vehement way.
They want to lie to you. They want to tell you that the government's reliable. They want to tell you that Islam is dangerous. When everybody know the Christians are to blame for this. Because it's the truth. Deal with it. But you complain every time I'm real with it. I'm about to kill critics and then take them to war and teach them how to put their love and their faith in Allah, or I'm breaking their jaw.
Which even 3 years after 9/11 was not exactly like a popular stance.
I mean, trust me, these guys weren't really happy with shit I was saying at that time. I think, you know what it is, man? I'm like too reactionary. I constantly, like, everyone feels the need to defend themselves when they're pushed into a corner. That's nature, you know what I'm saying? It's just animalistic instinct. But everyone has a different way that they defend themselves. And for years, my way was like, I'm going to go so fucking far that everyone's going to be up in arms. And it worked and can work, but you have to live with that for the rest of your life, you know what I mean, with that decision. And, you know, it's like, that's not always easy to deal with when you go back and think about shit that you've said over a 20-year career. You know what I mean? It's
starting when you were, when was it the first record you were?
The Amber Probe 96. Was 96. So I was like 19 recording Psychosocial. Yeah. The first professionally done project we did. Jedi Mind Tricks was called Soulcraft. It was named after the Bad Brain song. Mm-hmm. It was the same group. It was just a different name. We were that since 92. So we're like 23 years together. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, but then do you beat yourself up over it because you guys were lucky enough to just have the brilliant John Lydon. It's like, I don't know if the way he approached it in 77 that he's going to in 2015, he's still batshit and he's still the man. You know what I mean? I don't know if he looks at some of that stuff is trite.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I'm still that kid when I was 19, the way John is still that kid, you know, but there's just different ways to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, well, I guess there's 20 different ways to discipline your child. You know what I mean? I don't know the right one, but I know that beating them isn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To reinforce that, you know what I mean? Like, or maybe like a pat on the butt or like a, you know, a little slap on the hand to say, no, don't burn yourself. You know what I mean? But like, I mean, there's kids that grew up with us, or my brothers, he just got fucked up. You know what I mean? He just got ass whippings. I mean, coming from an Italian home, you know, I got the wooden spoon to the head. You know what I mean? But I could never lay a hand on a child. You know what I mean? It's like, so I'm talking, you know, I sort of talk.
No. Do you think that, like, how old is your son now?
He's two.
He's two. Do you think that, like, having a son has made you think more about this, not, you know, about your legacy and about ideas you put out into the world?
I think it all culminate. I think shit came together all at the same time. I had, like, Jan, who's been, like, my best friend and business partner since we were in 10th grade. And then some of Stoop's feelings on, like, yo, man, sometimes I get what you're trying to do. I do. But sometimes you go over the top and not everyone gets it. And, like, my son coming along, it was like all of this came at once. You know, the alcoholic thing, the moment of clarity. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it wasn't alcohol. It was, yo, are you, we know what you're trying to do. You're trying to help people, but there's other ways to say it. You could be less abrupt. You could be, you know what I mean? Without changing shit up, too. That's important.
Right. I think in the most important ways, this record is pretty, you know, it's still you. It's still uncompromising in the ways that, like.
Right.
That
in the matter. Good ways.
Yeah.
Yes. You can be uncompromising and not be an asshole.
Right.
I didn't think you could before. Mm. That's the difference. I didn't know that you could make uncompromising art and not be a dickhead.
Right.
Because historically, brilliant minds are assholes or difficult to deal with. You know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm one of them, but I just looking at people that were heroes to me. You know what I mean? It's like you watch Bukowski like drunkenly kicking his wife in that movie on the couch. You're like,
yeah.
Oh, shit! You fucking punk! You think you walk out on me every fucking night? You fucking whore! You bitch.
Who do you think I am? Just, I'm going to do this, live with other people.
You fucking shit.
Wow, it's strange to say this guy's one of my heroes. He still is. You know, I never touched a girl in my life. I laughed. I shouldn't have, but I thought it was a funny part of the movie. Yeah. But it's like, it's strange to have heroes who are all so flawed. You know what I mean? Like, all of my heroes were like severely flawed. Mental cases, you know what I mean? Whether it's, you know, Bukowski or Miles Davis or Coltrane, you know, whether they had drug or alcohol problems or heroin addicts or, you know, there has to be something wrong with you, I think, to be creative, to be good and creative. If I meet someone and they're too normal, I know their shit is not going to be good before I hear it. I know how judgmental that sounds, but I'm always right. If I meet this, like, normal, good-natured, you know, good-natured is great. But if you're not a little bit off or I don't see a little bit of bat shit gleam in your eye, I'm like, eh. Or you're just not going to have the mental acumen to deal with this shit that comes with it. Mm-hmm. Can you wrap your head around, you know, a kid in Norway saying your song saved his life? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I
mean, you've had a lot of really, you know, it took a while, but you've been, you know, you've had a lot of really personal stuff on your records.
It
wasn't until like 06, I think, what's the song? Serenity and Murder, that you really started talking about, you know, some of the stuff going on with you mentally.
And like Napoleon Bonaparte, I throw a dart and blow your bones apart. The lonely parts when you're falling like you owe in heart. My fucking soul is dark. I wouldn't wish it on you. I wouldn't wish any of my mental conditions on you. I just wish that y'all would leave me for dead. Wish that I would go away and fall asleep in my bed. I'm lethal instead. But I suppose
I think I was like really embarrassed. When I started dealing with depersonalization disorder, I didn't even know what it was. So I spent years of my life, this is going to sound crazy to you. It might choke me up by talking about it. But I spent years of my life thinking that I was dead and stuck in purgatory because I smoked a blunt of dust before my 9th grade exams and felt like I was floating above my body watching it. You know, when you see those cheesy shows and people talk about the near-death experience in their body, that's how I live my life. That's what depersonalization disorder is, but it wasn't, it can't be treated. There's no cure. They can just treat the symptoms. So I spent years of my life questioning, am I in a purgatory? Am I dead? Like heavy shit, man. Like would close my eyes and feel, when I would lay in my bed, it would feel like it kept going, like I was falling into the abyss. And I was 14 and 15 and 16 dealing with this. So by the time it came around to making music, I was like, I'm not talking about this shit. You know what I mean? Even saying it now, it's never like spoke about it other than the song I made about it. But I never spoke to anyone about that because it's not cancer. It's not autism. It's not this thing that people are so aware of. You know what I mean? And so few people know about it. And there's like two books about it. And when you read those books, the people's stories are people being like, I didn't know how to tell someone that I felt like I wasn't there, that I was living outside of my body, that I was felt like, is this what purgatory is? You know what I mean? Like purgatory that we were raised to think, you right. know, that someplace inside heaven and hell.
When did you get a name for it? When did you attach a name to it?
Late 2008, 9, 10, maybe around then.
Wow.
Yeah. Like when I would describe it to someone or a doctor or something, it was like no one could tell me what was happening. So I was getting like a lot of like, sorry, kid, like here's pills that aren't for that, but I guess you should be taking something. You know what I mean? So it's like misdiagnosis, then placed on medication that was not designed to treat this. So what is it doing to me physiologically, or to, you know what I mean? And yeah. how did that affect me? And still to this day, you know what I mean? So it's like, I just kept trying to Google words, catch words, you know, derealization, or you know what I mean? Words that I could think to describe it, hoping that that would lead me to something, you know what I mean? And then I found the word. And when I found the word, I still live with it daily, but I can tell you the craziest day in a good way was the day I heard like 10 people describe exactly what I've been going through since 1992. It was like a weight lifted off my shoulders. It didn't fix the disease, but it was, holy shit, other people deal with this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because it's what starts happening is when you have it, you only feel comfortable in your environment. And the irony of my life and the irony of the be careful what you wish for shit is I'm rapping in front of a mirror at 9 years old, wanting to be Cool C and Steady B and wish that I can have a career in music and tour the world. Now, the thing that scares me the most is leaving my comfortable environment, which is my home and which is Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because I read an interview with you, I think it was early last year even, uh-huh. and you said that like you hadn't toured because it had been difficult for you for like even the past 8 months or so, the prior 8 months to leave your area.
I'm going through a lot of, I'm struggling right now. You know what I mean? And it's like, what is the alternative? This is all I know. I don't have a degree. You know, I can't fix a car, you know.
And the album tour cycle is still the dominant mode.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, your job is to interview artists. You know better than anyone. I'm sure they've all told you that.
Like, yeah.
Where are record sales? They're gone. Nobody buys wax. Nobody goes to the store on Tuesday like when we were kids. Like, oh, every Tuesday, let's go. What's coming out? You know, go to the punk section, the metal section, hardcore, hip hop. That's dead. The opening it up. Remember, you'd smell it, the way the paper tastes yeah. and shit. Like, it was a whole experience for me. Yo, who produced that? Who did they thank? Oh, they know that band? Oh, this band thanked that band? They don't. It's like, I'll be painstakingly this artwork. Jan, make sure it says this and tell the guy to do this. And then we go, does anyone care anymore? Does a 16-year-old care? He's probably going to steal my shit anyway right. and not even know that that's wrong. You know what I mean? Has that kid ever been? And I'm getting to the point now where I look at our crowds and I'm like, I wonder if any of these kids have been in a record store. I have a niece in her mid-20s, a nephew in his early 20s, and my youngest nephew is 19. None of the three of them have been in a record store.
Even been?
No.
Wow.
No. And my brother is a lifelong collector. Like, that's how I got, I mean, vinyl, opening it with a razor blade so that the plastic still stays on, putting it on cassette and then back in and then never,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is where I learned all this shit, learned behavior, you know, my parents listening to Stevie and Smokey Robinson and stuff like that, just having music around, you know what I mean? Hearing Sabbath at 6 years old, like, yo, the first Sabbath record at 6 years old at night, like, fuck out of here, man. What are you fucking doing as a brother? You know, they're 11 and 12 years older than me, so they're 17 and 18, right. Like, drinking and smoking weed and think it's a good idea to throw on the first Sabbath record.
Oh, my God.
Fucking Diabolus and Musica, fucking Notes of the Devil. I slept for like 5 years between that, and then they're babysitting me and I'm watching fucking Evil Dead and Suspiria and Italian Gore. You know, you wonder how I've turned out this way.
Yeah. Well, you're obviously a huge movie buff.
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, the song on the new record you have with R.A. is named after a pretty obscure spaghetti western.
Yes, sir.
Does that play into your rapping at all? Like the thinking about movies, thinking about, you know, storytelling and film, how film works, like, does that...
The way that people's songs. Minds work, dude, like Jordanowski's Dune. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, my God. You got to check that, man. Yeah. Like, but watching how his mind, or watching Kubrick talk, or watching Stanley Kubrick's boxes and seeing his process and how batshit crazy he was, I'm intrigued by people's process.
Yeah, we had Lisa Leone on the show.
Oh, really?
And she was I forget the exact title, but basically Kubrick's right hand through the making of Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. She's in Stanley Kubrick's boxes talking about just how batshit Stanley was. The scene where Tom Cruise walks in with Sidney Pollack and he's shooting pool. All he did was walk in and say hello when they're shooting pool. And Kubrick shot that scene for 3 weeks. And he'd say cut, so they would cut, and Tom Cruise would be confused. Stanley, I'm just walking in. I don't believe you. What's there to believe? The way you're walking in this room, I don't believe you. And then this dialogue of, I'm just walking in a room. There's nothing to believe about that. Yes, there is. That's not how this person would walk into this room. Crazy. And the Sidney Pollack part was originally played by Keitel, and after 3 days, get the fuck, like, they almost fist fought.
Wow.
He's batshit. So that...
That level of attention to detail is...
Yeah, I don't know that, like, did The Shining, did The Killing, did that affect my writing from a storytelling point of view? But maybe watching someone's process is really dope to me, you know what I mean? And how crazy they are.
Yeah.
And the attention to detail and why they are that brilliant and why he's probably the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about scary music a minute ago with, you know, hearing Sabbath when you were young and impressionable.
Yeah.
Another person a lot of people thought was scary and who you actually shout out on the new record on Hell's Messenger is Schoolie D. Marvelous money to murder y'all. Go bully on. 50 dudes park side killers. Where's Schoolie on? That's the glass table that I'm putting your medulla on. Black trees, black ski mask, black uniform. Were you in Philly when his first stuff came out?
Oh, yeah.
So what were your impressions of his music and of him when he first came out? I feel like, you know, people might say, oh, he's the first gangster rapper, but no one really knows what that means.
Right.
In that, like, no one heard that kind of stuff before.
I believe that what you just said is true. I believe, or that he laid the foundation for what would be gangster rap. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't think there's an NWA without, you know, looking at my Gucci, it's about that time.
Looking at my Gucci, it's about that time. The answer's moving to start humming the rhyme. I heard you was out there playing my lines. And if I catch you, boy, your ass is mine.
Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking to trash, we'll pull your car. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit.
You know, those, I mean, the PSK and Parkside Killers and like, I mean, it was fucking Iraq, man, in West Philly in the 80s. Like, looked like Beirut. So, you, like you said, people say maybe first gangster rap, maybe first reality rap, because it was such a fun, you had Sugar Hill Records putting out these fun, you know, and Spoonie G and you know, Sugar Hill Gang and Kool Mo D or Curtis Blow. Party music, you know, I think everyone would agree that's how it started.
Right.
And then
sort of an extension of disco, basically.
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. Rhyming over the sheet.
Yeah.
And then this guy comes out of Philly talking about smoking dust and Parkside Kill. I think people are like, what the fuck?
Tell me about this party on the south side. Come up, prison, jump into a ride. Got at the bar, count some black. Got to the place and who did I see? A sucker ass nigga trying to sound like me. Put my pistol up against his sand. I said, sucker ass nigga, that's what she did. I threw it around across.
You know, and he's
did you get it when it came out?
I mean, nah,
you
were probably I don't think
eight
so.
Or
was,
nine,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I was, yeah, 85 or 86. I was 8 or 9. I got it on a visceral. I knew I felt it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was it the simplicity of the drum programming? Was it his rhyme style? Was it his voice? I mean, I look back at stuff that influenced me and realized that it influenced me and I didn't even understand it the way I should have.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
If I look at Nation of Millions and how old I was, what did I I thought I got it and it changed. It helped me become who I am and the person I am. But I listen to that record now and understand as a man what Chuck was doing,
yeah,
and standing up against or for, you know what I'm saying? And saying like, I mean, you know, it's political commentary, you know, social political commentary. Like, was I understanding that in 88? Like, you know, no, sure I didn't.
Yeah. One other Philly thing that comes up throughout your catalog or, you know, sort of Philly icon in series events is Mumia.
Uh-huh.
You mention him repeatedly.
Yes.
On your records.
It's for everybody holding hammers. If you come into our shows and you go bananas and holding banners in support of Mumia Jamal. Run up on you fucking pigs with the heaters and all. I'm deceiving the girls that got sound from the city where they frame Mumia. We gonna break them out, run up with them flames and heaters. I'm ready to go to war for Mumia. Fuck George Bush in this war. We gonna see.
What does his case mean to you as a person, as a journalist?
I mean, they tried, they didn't succeed, but they tried to silence an intelligent black voice in Philly. You know, he was well respected, no criminal history, no violent history, loving family man, you know, but that was the most corrupt police department in the country, maybe ever. The 80s, mm-hmm. Frank Rizzo police department.
Yeah.
I mean, infamous. You know what I mean? Like, so this man starts shedding light on that. It starts picking up steam nationally. And all of a sudden, this case where nothing adds up puts him on death row. And now he's very ill and on death row.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor for the city of Philadelphia that he's still fighting. You know, it won't go out. Like, won't cop a plea. You know what I mean? Still writing brilliantly, I might add. Still, when he is allowed phone time, talking to whoever will allow, give him the voice and saying brilliant things, just like, that's our city.
Do you remember the 85 move bombing?
The incident discussed here was a culmination of a 1985 police operation in the city of Philadelphia that was the end of a standoff between police and a radical black liberation group called MOVE. MOVE members, led by John Africa, lived in a commune, and in 1981 they relocated to a row house in West Philadelphia. Over the following 4 years, neighbors complained about several aspects of MOVE's activities, including rat-attracting composting and the broadcasting of political messages at all hours. Both Mayor W. Wilson Good and Police Commissioner Gregor Sambor began to categorize the group as a terrorist organization. On May 13, 1985, the police attempted to clear the building and arrest indicted MOVE members. This led to an armed standoff. Police lobbed tear gas in the building, MOVE members fired back, and consequently the police returned fire with automatic weapons. Sambor then ordered that the compound be bombed. From a state police helicopter, 2 1-pound bombs made of FBI-supplied water gel explosive were dropped on the house. The resulting explosions ignited a fire that eventually destroyed approximately 65 nearby houses. The firefighters, who had earlier deluged the MOVE members in a failed attempt to evict them from the building, stood by as the fire caused by the bomb engulfed the first house and spread to others, having been given orders to let the fire burn. Officials claimed to fear that MOVE would shoot at the firefighters, as they had done before. 11 people, John Africa, 5 other adults, and 5 children aged 7 to 13, died in the resulting fire, and more than 250 people were left homeless. Ramona Africa, one of the 2 survivors, stated that the police fired at those trying to escape the burning house, while police stated that MOVE members had been firing at the police. Mayor Good soon appointed an investigative commission, which issued its report on March 6, 1986. The report denounced the actions of the city government, stating that dropping a bomb on an occupied row house was unconscionable. No one from the city government was charged criminally.
I could see the smoke from my front porch. I remember it like it was yesterday. Crazy. I mean, did you see the documentary?
Yeah.
It's heavy stuff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember like seeing the smoke, and it's like, you're told things about your mayor and about the police when you're a kid. That's the good guy. So I'm asking my mom and my dad, why did the nice man blow up the poor people? You know what I'm saying? I don't know like how my, I don't remember like what my mom or dad said. I'm sure they just lied, because the truth, I don't know if you're 8, if you're ready for that. Well, sit down, son, and let me tell you how institutionalized race. Let daddy tell you about institutionalized racism and how it's going to affect your life and what you're going to see the next 30 years. I don't think that's, you know, my pop was just kind of like OG Italian guy, and not ready to tackle that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously an insane event. You know, moving kind of to your career, even getting to something as simple as your name, right? You're originally Icon.
Sure.
Maybe you had other rap names before that.
Tons.
I don't know.
Yeah, they were usually whatever graph name I was writing. Mm-hmm. I guess it's been enough years where I won't get locked up.
What are some?
I wrote Crash 77 for a long time, and I wrote Icon with a K. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, a lot of MCs, you know, starting obviously with KRS.
Yeah.
You know, KRS was Krishna. He turned it into KRS. Krishna KRS started the, like, y'all, you know, Levi 167, you know, a lot of like New York graph legends would just use that. Oh, that's my graph name. It could be my rap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was doing then. You know what I mean?
Were you any good at writing?
At throw ups. Yeah. Could I do an amazing piece or something? No, but we were just, for me, it was like, I ran with all amazing graph writers. I grew up with Nope. He's one of the Philly legend. Like, so running around and just doing throw ups while those dudes, it was more, it's like, are you guys familiar with Love Park in Philly?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't skate there, but it's in the 80s and 90s where everyone skated, smoked blunts. It's like our Washington Square Park, basically. Mm-hmm. Skateboarders, hip hop heads, you know, 40s blunts, boombox playing hip hop. It's kind of, everyone was writing, rapping, skateboarding, smoking blunt. It's like everyone did everything. And then as you got a little bit older, oh, well, Stevie's really dope at skateboarding. And now Stevie Williams is the biggest skateboarder in the world. Oh, Vinny's a little bit better at rapping. So now Vinny does that. You know what I mean? Everyone was finding themselves there. You know what I mean? So it was graph writers. And I always ran around with graph writers, even though I was probably the least good of them.
So the name Vinnie Paz itself,
right?
You sort of break it in a little bit on the second album.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Some of the cuts toward the end of the record.
Hey, Vinnie Paz, baby. 2G, baby. Army the family. All that good shit. Yeah. Yeah. The lawnmower man smashes.
I don't know if they were recorded later than the others or not, but you break it in as kind of a nickname amongst many.
Sure.
And then the next record, it's sort of your full-fledged name. Sure. How did that happen?
Well, I always loved like how EPMD were Eric and Parrish. I thought it was dope that Keith Murray's rapping was Keith Murray. Like, that's just, it was just dope. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, it'd be dope to incorporate my name. My real last name's too long, and you know, you never want to, the old Italian adage of like, they won't like you if you're too ethnic. You know what I mean? Hence why everyone chopped their name at Ellis Island. You know what I'm saying? So, Pazienza.
American boxer Vinny Pazienza, who boxed under the nickname the Pazmanian Devil.
Me and my pop, like every Saturday that he fought on Wide World Sports on ABC, we would watch it. He was like a hero. So I'm like, that's it. I can use my real name and pay.
Yeah.
You know, it's an homage to my favorite fighter. So yeah, that's how I came up. Like you said, I think you made a good point that I like slid it in a little bit on Violent by Design. You know what I mean? It's like when you give your girlfriend good news before you tell her that you broke a car or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Did
you know at that, even back at like 2000, that it was going to be your major
I think
name?
I was like, this has a quote unquote ring to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's corny to say, but it is needed to some degree. You know what I mean? It's not that I ever thought I'd be a pop star, but it's like like I said about being a bit too like abrasive. It's like even those names, like Icon, the Verbal Hologram.
Right. It's a lot of syllables.
Fucking long. It's like it's kind of fucking stupid, maybe. And then it's like, all right, I'll chop off the verbal. That's dumb. And it's like, oh, I said Icon, hologram a couple of times, and it's like, all right, the word icon, let's think about that word. There's got to be fucking 10 dudes around the world that thought of that same name.
And then there were.
And there were. There's like a DJ icon. There are dudes. Various, right? It could be graph writers, DJs, B-boys. It's like, okay, this is me. This is who I am. And it represents me more than any of these other names, whether they were my graph names or anything else. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like you said, I don't know how deliberate it was, but it must have been subconscious to be like, say it a couple times on this record so it's not foreign next time out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So boxing, was there ever a point even when you were a kid that you were like, oh, it's boxing or music?
Yes.
What was the fork in the road moment?
I believe that you cannot do anything in life that you love, that you want to succeed in, and not do it 110%. And it was like, all right, am I going to run 5 miles before school, go to the gym and spar, do this rap shit? Like, something's going to have to give, you know what I mean? Like, I think being paid to have a couple drinks, kick it with your boys, and rap on stage might be better than getting concussed. Maybe.
Right.
You know.
How old were you when you figured that out?
Like early high school. Had my pop not passed, it probably would have flip-flopped. You know what I mean? Because
he was that heavy into boxing.
Yeah. And that, like,
his brother was a trainer, right?
OG. My Uncle Willie trained Jeff Chandler, who was Bantamweight champ. So I was around there. He was married to my aunt Becky.
Oh, okay.
They called her KO Becky. He like the there's a defensive style called the Philly Shell, and he like basically invented it, Uncle Willie, like this style that's still used and like trained, you know.
Yeah. But you might have ended up as a boxer.
I believe. Well, I know my dad would have shut the music shit down had I said I want to go further than hobby. Sorry, yeah. I said habit. It's a Freudian slip. Right,
right. Right.
My brother Lou was a metal musician. They let them practice at the house. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if my pop was like if my brother was like, this is what I want to do for a living. I don't know what my pop would have said. He he didn't really get the chance because, you know what I mean? He passed away. Like, my gut tells me just the stubborn OG Dago shit would have been like, hey, it's a fucking pipe dream. Yeah, you got to get your hands dirty. You know what I mean? And like, yeah. That like, you know, fighting or my pop ran a car detail, you know, my pop owned a car detail shop.
Yeah.
And some guy cut across the lot when I was like on the lot to avoid a light, but he's doing like 60. And I was out there, I was a little kid. My pop like chased him up to the light and just drubbed the shit out of him through the window.
Wow.
Yeah. He wasn't fucking around.
You know, I was looking at shit about the group, right? Okay. And the early days and the interviews you did. And you said, like, something that I thought was kind of surprising. No, it's not bad. It's not bad. Just like, as far
you
as, like,
know that yet.
Yeah, as far as breaking out on the West Coast,
yes.
That Peanut Butter Wolf was super important to that.
Very important.
How was that?
He was working at THC, yeah? I could be saying this wrong. I know T and C are correct. Maybe not the middle one. THC was a little distributor. And... you know, we were Philly kids. It's without a name. And he was working there and was like, we'll take a box and like basically set in motion what to this day, 19 years later, is still a fucking humongous fan base on the West Coast. And it's because of that guy. And he's a good dude, Chris.
That's so interesting. People wouldn't, I think, knowing him and knowing his reputation, some of the stuff he's been involved with, people might not necessarily think, oh, like Jedi Mind Tricks.
I agree.
That's a group he would get behind.
I agree. Maybe he didn't like the music. Maybe he doesn't now. But maybe he saw, I think he loves music so much and was like, well, maybe this isn't my thing, but it's going to be somebody's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So because... I know myself, like, would I have to love Taylor Swift's stuff to put her out and make $20 million? I would just have to know that it was good to somebody, you know what I mean? Or would mean something to somebody.
Yeah.
My apologies to anyone who could actually be affected by Taylor Swift's music. That's another topic another day.
There was one other kind of, like, quirky little thing about a lot of your songs. Almost every time, I think... from the beginning through today, you use overstand instead of understand.
I left the scar, so your crabs would overstand. Mental danger would send you to a holy land. You can't overstand the mathematics. How I rip bars, walk through walls, perform magic. Yeah, I pretended to overstand the matrix without attempting to overstand its basics. We dedicated to catfish. Y'all don't overstand how fucking strong my wife is. I'm from a time where every song was righteous. Before rap was just a swarm of white kids.
Yeah.
Why is that? I know it's a formulation that was popular for a while and then sort of fell out of favor. Like, it's why?
Well, the thing is, when we were talking about Islam, but being around people, you know, obviously it's anything with Judaism, Christianity, there's sex. You know what I mean? You have Sunni Islam, you know, you have Shia, and then you had all these offshoots, you know, from when Malcolm X, you know, the nation of 5%, the 5% nation of gods and earths and the nation of Islam. And the slang originated from the 5%ers basically saying, if you're understanding something, you're standing under it, you're below it, you're not grasping it. If you overstand, you're standing over the knowledge with the power over the knowledge and using it. So it was just... it's tons of 5%ers in Philly, and I kicked it with them, you know, Love Park. So it's just like, you just pick up little slang, like they call each other God. Yo, peace, God. You've heard that, you know.
Yeah, of course.
New Yorker, of course. Yeah, like, peace, God. Like, you know, it starts becoming, it does mean something, but then it's the vernacular just becomes a part of the lexicon, you know what I mean? Where it goes beyond that, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just... I've always been a sponge, man, like of my surroundings, you know what I mean? Down to like the fact that I'll rock a European festival with 30,000 people wearing an obituary sweatshirt, you know what I mean? Because I'm not like, to play a part, like you have to dress like a rapper and it's a uniform. Why don't you look this, you know what I mean? Like I'm not, like there's no box, you know what I mean? If someone doesn't get did I drop John Tardy's name, who's the singer of Obituary? Like, I can't worry about that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because if I don't say that line, then I'm not being me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Another thing that comes through your music a lot.
I shouldn't have said that bad thing about Taylor Swift. She seems like a nice girl. She actually does. Sure. Of all pop stars, she does seem like a nice kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, I don't like her music, but I actually think she's probably a good human being. So sorry, Taylor. Sure you're listening.
Right.
Sure she's a fan of Johnny Lydon as well. Whoever's listening to this podcast of me, please go back and listen to the John Lydon episode.
Oh, thank you. So you either mention or quote, sometimes like literally quote or paraphrase Nietzsche a ton.
Yeah, yeah.
From the beginning.
As I decay, demons prey above me like a vulture. Ability to endure contradiction is a high sign of culture. Verbal sculpture, self-defacing. It is not God or lunacy that I am facing. Sending you to the squared circle to meet me. To beat me won't be easy. You'll face DC's of Nietzsche. Blood'll appease me. The mic is flooding me, Nietzsche in philosophy. I am a vampire, I'm proud to be. I cannot be seen in your photography. Vinny an anomaly.
What is it about him that resonates with you?
I don't know. I'm never able to say, to answer that when anyone says, like, why do you like da-da-da? Why are you obsessed with Kubrick? Do you see yourself in people, maybe, and that's what it is? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, if I was to ask you that, like, you know, who is your favorite writer? Do you know offhand, or would you have to think about it?
I would say maybe Sarah Kane, who's an English playwright.
Okay. Now, would it be because, oh, it's so articulate, or I like the style, or do you connect with it? Do you think that's what it is?
It's hard being on this end of the.
But I feel like I don't know how, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But
kinship, kindred spirit. I think, like with Bukowski, it's sad to say that I see a lot of, you know, when you're talking about a mess of a man. But I think when I see anything of myself, I'm not comparing my brilliance. I'm not brilliant like these guys, but some of their faults, when I think, like, I've never liked anyone artistically that I saw as perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Tom Hanks, I don't know how many Oscars he has. Tom Hanks has been being Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks plays Tom Hanks. I don't know how he wins awards for that. Tom Hanks has never not been Tom Hanks since Bosom Buddies. I don't understand it. And I'm like, see, I must see the world differently. Not better, just differently. Yeah. That I don't see, like, but maybe it's because that guy just seems like this perfectly nice white American male living the, and I don't have any connection to that.
Yeah.
And I see someone, Dostoevsky, this fucking tormented, rundown man, and I'm like, oh, I see that.
Right.
I know what that's about.
And with Nietzsche, it's not like you're not just name dropping, like, oh, you know, Superman or something, like, not right, just like right. The most obvious concepts. Like, you quote is like late shit. Like,
yeah, well, like, I the more as he lost his mind, I think I started getting more. You know what I mean?
I'm intrigued by
it. I know it's dark, but like, and we're obviously having a great time talking. So it's not like, I don't want to say like I'm a dark person. I am when I'm alone and my thoughts are dark,
yeah.
But I don't like to project that. You know what I mean? Because it's like, fuck it, man. We all have our limbs. We're all breathing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kids is healthy. It's like, you know, but I always seem to like be drawn to darkness. Film, writers. You know what I mean? Someone, there's something like that. Oh man, a happy motherfucker makes me mad. Like, I hate happy people, bro. I hate, but I think I don't. I think I hate that I'm not that way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like before I say I hate happy people, I should go back and say, I think that I do because I'm just mad that I can't attain that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I think I hate stupid people because stupid people are happy because they're too stupid to know that they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
That everything is fucked, that we're all going to be worm food sooner than later. All three of us probably are closer to being dead than being born. It's dark shit.
Just mathematically.
Yeah, but great. Yeah. And then you can't argue with math, man.
Yeah.
You can argue whether or not there's an afterlife or do I turn into energy. You can argue all of that, and everyone could have a valid point, from a brilliant scientist that's an atheist to an Islamic scholar, but you can't argue with that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to kick the fucking bucket.
Yeah. Well, you said yourself, you said, you know, I'm the center inside the placenta of math.
You get split in fucking half, but I call him the hologram's wrath. But I am the center inside the placenta of math. You clash with cyanide gas and die fast. Rhythmical equivalent of solids, liquids, and gas.
Yeah.
what the hell did that mean anyway?
I don't know. You know, when I was playing with words there or in other parts, like, oh, that's dope. And then, well, does it make sense? I go, well, I don't know. What does that mean? When does it become like pseudo-intellectual, you know, this goes to any writing, you know, rock or whatever. It's like, there's a thin line between saying some clever shit and, like, I took too much acid, drivel,
right,
pseudo-intellectual bullshit to a dude you want to throw an egg at, you know, at a festival, you know what I mean? Yeah, I look back on that and probably...
So just, you may have tipped over that line, sure, once or twice.
Yeah, this is dope line. This sounds dope rhythmically. Mechanically, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something like that, maybe.
Mm. Interesting. You know, one other thing, I know we're kind of running a little low on time, is like...
It's all good, brother. Yeah. Take your time.
But, you know, Violent by Design, you know, people love it. I think, yeah, it's kind of, you know, maybe your sort of fans' favorite, sure, of your records. And at least from what I've read, you seem much more attached to the Servants in Heaven,
yeah, I am,
record. What is that like that people are like, yeah, I really love that thing you did when you were 19, like over and over again, sort of your whole life?
It kind of goes back to what we were talking about of, think of yourself when you were 19. If you were interviewed John Lydon then, and how lucky you are to have done it now that you've,
yeah,
seen shit and taken more in, you know what I mean? Whereas you didn't then. It's kind of me being like, thank you for complimenting the 19-year-old idiot. You know what I mean? It's weird because they're showing you love. You know what I mean? But it's like, I find I'm the type of person that will hit the lottery and the first thing I'll be bitching about is the taxes, instead of, you know what I'm,
yeah,
saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's like constant, man. It's like, I'm the rap Larry David. It's like, I fucking find the bad in everything, man.
Yeah.
Even if I'm doing it jokingly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'll do it with a smile on my face and try not to make anyone else. So it's like, I'm like, what? So does that mean I'm whack now? That record's from 2000. So, you know what I'm saying?
Have I, like, not done anything good? That, in
right,
the past,
right.
15,
like,
years?
Now, yeah. Is that what they're implying? No, of course not.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, what if my favorite Slayer record is Rain of Blood and that's 86? So I'm telling them you haven't done anything great in 29 years? No, it's just, you know what I mean? Or like, I think London Calling, wouldn't you say it's the best Clash album? But like, does that mean Joe didn't do other shit, or maybe other shit is better? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know? And it's like, that's probably with everybody. I'm happy that one person ever took the time to pull out $10 out of their pocket and buy my music. So any form of, you know, any effect that it may have had on anyone, it's a blessing.
Yeah. And the, you know, something, you know, going through your solo records, especially the first one, there's the Keep Moving On track.
Yeah.
I think the middle verse is, you know, literally about you.
It was like 91, 92. I remember people telling us that ain't nobody signing yo. There's no Italians or Puerto Ricans that shining through. Y'all should go back and just do what y'all was designed to do. We ain't listening to nothing.
Yeah.
The first and third verses of it are like this sort of storytelling,
sure, sure,
first person thing.
Yeah.
I lost my job at the factory and that's disastrous. They said it's due to regulations and higher taxes. They ain't give me no notice, they knocked me off my axis. I can't pay the electric bill, it's total blackness. I signed up cause they promised me some college money. I ain't the smartest motherfucker, but I'm not a dummy. They told me I would be stationed in places hot and sunny. I had a lot of pride, motherfuckers got it from me. These people over here innocent, they never harm me. My sergeant and try to convince me that they would try to bomb me. I feel like an outsider stuck.
You don't really do that very much.
Nah.
What made you try it on that record?
You brought it up earlier, like, when did something click in your head to talk about yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it was like, am I comfortable enough in my own skin to, like I did a song about the depersonalization, right? Called This Happiness Just a Word.
There's not an accurate diagnosis to show you. Basic neurobiology isn't close to. I'm watching life as a spectator. I can't help myself even though I possess data. It's not a part of my spirit to want to test nature. You sick, you know what I'm feeling, cousin, and let's wager.
I
have trouble
retaining. I talked to Jan about it. And this is a struggle, and I'm going to cry while I write this song. I might cry in the booth. When I did a song for my stepfather, it took me like a while to get through that verse in the mic.
I walked in that morning and knew something was wrong. I tried to talk to you, Rock, you didn't respond. I called 911 and then ran for my mom's. Waited for the ambulance and I tried to be calm. Mom's, when were you?
You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, when these bozos behind a computer in North Dakota call you whack, you have the choice to shrug it off and go, who fucking cares, man? This kid didn't grow up like me. You know what I'm saying? Who is he to critique me? But when you put yourself out there like that, it becomes more personal if they were to critique that. So I think that's what the delay was. All those years, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. If someone would like
it would really hurt.
It would hurt and make me angry. Not just like, oh, that hurt my feelings. Like, I'd want to track them down and Jay and Silent Bob me.
Yeah.
Do you post as Magnolia fan on MoviePoopShoot.com?
Yeah.
Did you write, fuck Jay and Silent Bob, fuck them and their stupid asses?
Yeah, a while ago. So?
How many people want to kick some ass?
I do.
How many people sit at home and
like, find their house and pummel them.
Right.
Because now you're shitting on me and a disease and a disorder. And you're mocking mental illness.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And, like, I don't play that on any level. Forget me. Like, I, you know, the fact that there are mentally ill veterans that we don't take care of on the street. No, it's a plague in this country. You know what I'm saying? People in jail, the crime rate, they're not treating people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That you don't fix people by putting them in a cage.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You don't, when someone gets sick, physically sick, you don't lock them in a room.
Right. You don't treat, say make yourself better.
No, you treat them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With care and love. And if need be, medicine. You don't lock them away into a room. You know what I'm saying? And that's what they're doing to these people that have mental problems, and they're treating them like criminals. You know what I mean? So it's like, I guess that's with Keep Moving On or the song for my step pop. Where I think I just started being like, well, I don't want to go. I don't want to finish my career and not say this stuff. So I guess I'll say it, and I'll deal with it.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you brought up, is happiness just a word?
Yeah.
Literally, the opening lines of that song are about how your family is not going to, you know, doesn't understand what you're going through.
Yes, sir.
My family don't understand what I go through. Underdiagnosed for 20 years, they never broke through. You ever been in such a fog, you don't know you? Never being able to do the shit you supposed to?
Did that song actually get through to them?
No. Nah.
Interesting.
Nah. Not one bit. We're East Coast Italians denial. That's East Coast. That's Italians everywhere.
Yeah.
Deny, deny, deny. Nothing's wrong. You know what I'm saying? There is no mental. I can hear my father's voice. Shake it off. You know what I mean? It doesn't exist. It doesn't. People that came up in depression, people in Agrigento, Sicily, who lived in dirt houses, like, don't want to hear about that kind of shit. It's a generational gap. You know what I mean?
So even though you literally laid out very specifically,
very
the
specifically,
symptoms and so
everything.
Forth. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. My mom knows that it exists, and it's like the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Is she the best mom of all time? Yes. Is she my best friend? Yes. Do we hang out all the time? Yes. But it's like, it's, I think it comes back to, like, maybe she'll feel responsible. You know what I'm saying? And then that opens up a whole other can of worms. It's like, so it's Oh, we just don't talk about things. You know what I mean? The whole family. I'm not just putting on my nuclear family.
Right.
Our extended family. It's like anything crazy that's ever happened. It's not like, let's sit down and discuss this. It's like, you know what I mean? Like yeah. I said, elephant in the room. Yeah. It'll always be like that.
You know, you've talked about, actually on that same record, you had Ancient Change, where you talk about you still have the same friends you did.
Yeah.
You know, in your teens and early
20s. I'm with one of them, yeah.
I still got the same people that remain with me, that was drinking 40s with me when they slain Biggie. And the same motherfuckers felt the pain with me when my stepfather died and they came with me. I ain't expect nothing less from them.
And you're with one of them now, your manager. Like, what are there downsides to that?
I think that, again, I'm not going
to... I don't mean to ask one with one in
no,
the room,
no, no, no.
But,
I'm not going to get into God or anything like that. I'm just going to get into in fate. I believe I have people around me that are filmmakers. I have people around me that are pro skaters. I have my friend Jim, who was a pro skater, is now a successful artist. He's currently in Amsterdam showing his art. There is no way that I just happened to bump into these people that were like-minded to me. It's just, there's no way that I believe that. And that, you know, when you have a friend and they just get it, they just get it. A little unspoken shit. You don't have to, like, some of these guys, I can just be like, you know what I mean? And he'll know what that means. Because it's like, you're so much alike in so many ways, you know what I mean? And intellectually, we couldn't be further from each other, a lot of us, in, you know, in how, like, how we conduct ourselves on the daily, you know what I mean? Like, I sleep all day, he's working all day on, you know what I mean, the business end of the music. It's like, but, like, everyone that I consider, like, in our brotherhood is like-minded intellectually, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ideologically, we feel, you know, obviously everyone doesn't agree on everything, you know, not every band or every, but
yeah,
we basically see the world alike. It's, and I just don't believe that I stumbled upon 6, 7, or 8 dudes 25 years ago that just happened. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If it did happen that way, then I guess, then it's the Big Bang Theory. You know what I mean? It just, you know.
One final thing,
sure.
If you don't mind. We haven't really talked about you and Stu much, your partnership
you know,
in Jedi Mind Tricks.
Yeah, it's my man.
But there was one thing that happened with you two that I think like maybe is emblematic of your relationship. I was hoping maybe you could take me back to it, which is like, you guys are 16, Roughhouse, you're a group already.
Yeah.
Roughhouse Records approaches you.
Yeah.
Approaches the two of you. And then tells Stoop, hey, I want you to sign a production deal. Forget this other guy rapping.
Yes.
And he said no. That's an insane amount of loyalty for a teenager who's basically been offered his lifelong dream on a silver platter to have. How did you guys manage to stay so loyal to each other before you had any real success?
If someone like put a gun to my head and said, describe that kid in one word, it would be loyal. It's, I can honestly say I've never seen that trait so dominant in another person in my life. It's amazing. It's amazing. So the least I can do is reciprocate, you know?
That's wild.
I mean, like, the thing was, he's older than me. I was 15. He was like 18, and I couldn't have even signed the contract legally without my mom. You know what I mean?
So there was doubts that even if, you know...
That I couldn't either way. Home. And they were signing the Fugees, and they had Cypress and Crisscross. And, like, Nas was originally going to be with Rough House, but Columbia bought it out. So, like, who knows if he would have contributed to any of those records.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was probably a shitty deal, but a deal that 99 of 100 people take, him being the one that didn't, you know?
Amazing.
I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah. And that seems like a great place to end. Congratulations on the new record.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Of course.
You guys are a class act.
It's very rare to find an artist as open as Vinny, whether we're talking about the influence of Schoolie D, his memories of seeing Slayer back in 86, or the stuff he got right and wrong on his own albums. He's always forthright, thoughtful, and honest. I was particularly moved by his openness when he was talking about his battles with depersonalization disorder. Talking about mental health is difficult under any circumstances, never mind with a microphone in your face. It's also rare to hear a rapper really grapple with his own influence on his fans, like Vinny does towards the beginning of our conversation when we're talking about homophobia and violence in his lyrics. I think that even hardcore Vinny Paz fans will have left this interview feeling like they learned something about him. I had a real blast doing it. Join us next week when our guest will be Say Adams. Say was the original creative director at Def Jam and is responsible for some of the most iconic album covers of all time. We talk his whole career, from his start as a teenage graffiti artist running around with Basquiat and Keith Haring, all the way through his recent huge 9/11 memorial piece downtown. Of course, we make pit stops at LL, Biggie, Jay-Z, and his good friends since 1983, the Beastie Boys. You can find The Cypher on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at The Cypher Show. Hit us up. Let us know what you thought of this week's show, ideas for future guests, anything you'd want to talk about. You can find more information about this episode, including a complete list of songs we played, as well as all of our past episodes online for free at thecyphershow.com. And don't forget to make a donation at patreon.com/thecyphershow and to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sitaro.
Oh man, a happy motherfucker makes me mad.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
OG Dago shit would have been like, hey, it's a fucking pipe dream. Yeah, you gotta get your hands dirty, you know what I mean?
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
There's a thin line between saying some clever shit and like, I took too much acid.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Is he our Andy Kaufman?
Right, exactly. I mean,
Andy
it's the
just
same
fucking thing. Won't Andrew. Stop, and yeah. Now he is. You know, because
yeah.
Like Andy wouldn't fucking stop.
Yeah,
never. Like family members, he'd be like, "Fucking stop!"
Right.
Like he, no, I'm Tony Clifton. Like we fucking know it's you, Andy, and he's like, you know what I mean? Like, there's only that level of batshit.
Yeah,
is like.
Yeah. It reminds
less
me
than 1% of the world is that bad shit.